This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Vanity Fair.
Hello and welcome to Little Gold Men, the award season podcast from Vanity Fair.
I am delighted and proud to introduce him as Academy Award winner.
And the Oscar goes to...
And the Oscar goes to...
The winner, it's a tie.
And any little girl who's practicing their speech on the telly, you never know.
Mom, I just want an Oscar.
I am Katie Rich. I'm here for today's interview episode with Rebecca Ford.
Hi, Katie.
Rebecca, you have our interview on this week's episode. You sat down and talked to the star of both the film version and the Broadway version of The Color Purple, Danielle Brooks.
Yeah, you know, I'm a believer in fate, and hearing her story, you're just like, oh, this was fated to happen, because that was her first Broadway experience as an audience member, was seeing The Color Purple and realizing, like, yes, someone who looks like me can have this sort of career. And then she was in the Broadway revival. She got nominated for a Tony for it. She, you know, the cast won a Grammy. And then she's in the theatrical version that's coming out now. So it just feels like this was her path in one way or the other. She was going to end up there. But she did have to audition, which I found surprising.
Yeah, she posted the video of where Oprah Zoomed her and told her that she had the role, which to me, I was just like, but she is. Like how can she have been in doubt about that? But I guess that's what happens with a production this large. You know, she's the only person who carried over from the Broadway production, or at least from the production that she was in. I know Fantasia Barrino had been in another version of it. So, you know, they really did rethink it from the ground up, it seems.
Yeah, she had to do a chemistry read as well before she got the role with Corey Hawkins, who she's good friends with from Juilliard. So it did feel like everything aligned for her. But I'm sure, you know, she wasn't the only one who wanted to play Sophia in this. So, you know, it was still a fight.
Yeah, her scenes with Corey Hawkins, you know, The Color Purple is a really heavy emotional movie, and she is the comic relief throughout a lot of it. But her dynamic with Corey Hawkins mainly made me think, like, can we get them a rom-com or just something? Like, they're so wonderful together on screen. Like, every scene they have together, you want more.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of chemistry there. And yeah, I think this role is tough because this character does have a difficult storyline, but also does provide a lot of those more comedic elements. So that's a really, you know, tightrope walk, and she really pulls it off. And I see why, you know, every screening of this movie, she's getting a standing ovation, because it is quite a performance.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to hear about it. Let's hear your conversation with the star of The Color Purple, Danielle Brooks.
I'm so excited to welcome Danielle Brooks to the podcast today. She stars in The Color Purple as Sophia, a film I got to see and will be out for the holidays, and is such a wonderful theatrical experience with your family or your friends. And I can't wait for everyone to see it. Danielle, I do want to start with this video that actually brought me to tears that I saw recently of your daughter watching the trailer for The Color Purple in the theater. Can you tell me about that experience for you?
Yes. So, you know, when you are doing these big films, they sometimes like let you know when your trailer is going to, you know, be presenting itself in theaters. And so the publicity team had told us that it would be showing during Barbie and The Little Mermaid. And my daughter was 3 at the time. She has never been to a theater. And so I got her and her little friend girls together and wanted to take them to see, you know, their first movie. And it was just so perfect because she's getting to see someone that looks like her, Halle Bailey, take on the role. And, you know, I dressed her up as a little princess mermaid. And and when it came on, I knew that I, like, that day I knew I only had one shot to get this because I was not coming back to the theater to, like, just purposely take my daughter. But I just knew I wanted her to see her mom on that screen. And so I set up my camera. I had two phones. I set one up on her and set one up on the screen, and didn't know what was, you know, her reaction was going to be. But she was just filled with joy, you know, and it filled my heart, immediately brought tears to my eyes. And I just got so emotional. Because at the end of the day, you want to leave your child with something. You know, I want to leave her with something. And to be able to do that, to, like, bring legacy to my family and giving her something to be proud of growing up. There's memories in that story, even between her and I, that I'll get to share with her one day. Like, the fact that, you know, Blitz was so gracious to try to put Freya in the movie. And mm-hmm. we dressed her up and, you know, did her hair, and she got hair and makeup and everything. And baby girl, you know, her time to shoot was right in the middle of her nap time, and it did not go well. So those are memories that I'll get to share with her. So, yeah, I'm very glad that I got to capture that moment.
Yeah, I mean, this film, whether it's the original version or the Broadway or the book, like, this story has such a emotional significance for so many people, especially, as you're saying, you know, people that get to see people that look like them on screen. Why did you feel like, yes, it's time to tell this story again in a film? Like, why did you feel like, you know, you wanted to be part of this retelling?
This story means so much to me, Rebecca. It mm-hmm. starts for me at 15, when I first came to New York for the first time, little girl from South Carolina who loved the theater. I won this internship that Bravo was doing to promote diversity. And they, like, let 15 kids and their parents come to New York for free and taught us how to make, you know, little short videos, and took us to the Today Show and stuff. And we had some downtime, and my dad took me to see The Color Purple. It was my first Broadway show that I got to see. And I was mind blown to see people that looked like me in a professional setting. Because people who grow up in small towns like myself, you know, and at the time, it's like 2005, there was no one that was doing this. The closest right. I had was Kevin Garnett. Like, Kevin Garnett was the guy who came from Malden, South Carolina, you know. That was the closest representation to making it that I had. And so I was so taken aback to see that there was possibilities for this theater thing that I loved. And I just became obsessed with the story. I became obsessed with getting to Broadway, finding a way to make it. And so I think that, for me, just how full circle it has been, you know, being that I starred in the Broadway revival in 2015, mm-hmm. I just know the power of representation. I know the power of telling your own stories and seeing yourself reflected in any media. And so to get to do that again, you know, for somebody that, you know, will now be that 15-year-old girl from that small town, to get for them to see me now and help to fulfill their dream by seeing me in this position, that's a big deal. That's what LaChance was for me. That's what Felicia P. Fields was, Oprah was, Whoopi was. And so now to get to fulfill that for someone else by the retelling of such an important historical story, that's just what you want.
Hey, I'm Brian Stelter, host of Inside the Hive from Vanity Fair. This week, with the help of Dan Adler and Olivia Nuzzi, we're going inside the media circus swirling around Donald Trump's criminal trial.
people want coverage of Donald Trump. There are sort of shades of 2015, 2016. I found it to be a total break from the reaction to a lot of Trump coverage in the last 2 years.
Join me, Brian Stelter, on Inside the Hive from Vanity Fair. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
And as you mentioned, you played Sophia on Broadway for a year. You got a Tony nomination. You have experience with this character. It feels like you would have been a shoo-in for the film version, but it sounds like you had to work for it.
Oh, honey, I worked. This was not an easy road by any means. So I found out about it. I don't know that maybe there were talks about it in like 2019, 2020. And so I just kept, you know, casually, every blue moon, texting Scott Sanders, the producer, being like, hey, you know, I'm available. And he was pretty, like, diplomatic about it. He was pretty, like, neutral, not, you know, showing his cards at all. Yeah. And so my team was like, we're going to get you a meeting with the director, Blitz. So I ended up having that meeting in 22 years ago. So what, 2021, okay, with Blitz in March. And we talked for like an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours about the story, about his, you know, viewpoint on what he wants to do with this. And, you know, just my thoughts about Sophia. And I didn't hear anything for a long time after that conversation. And so maybe like a few months later, they asked me to put myself on tape to do Hell No, the song. And in my spirit, I'm like, you know, there's this part of you that ego comes up and you're like, I won a Grammy with y'all right, doing this. Why are y'all making me sing? I didn't, like, my voice hasn't changed. If anything, it's gotten better. So, like, what are we doing? But I kept telling myself, do not get in the way of your blessing. You know, so I humbly put myself on tape for it and waited some months again. And then I remember hearing about some actor. I don't remember who it was, but I heard some actor like writing the director. They wrote the director how much they wanted the part. Hmm. So I was like, look, I ain't got nothing to lose. I'm going to write Blitz a letter. So I wrote Blitz a letter, just expressing how much I cared for this part in this character. And even if I wasn't the person for his movie, I wish it and pray it the best. Hmm. And still didn't hear anything, but that's okay. And then in September, so now we go from March to September, that's about 6 months, I get a call from my agent saying they want you to do a chemistry read with Corey, and who plays Harpo. And now Corey and me go back way back. We went to Juilliard together. We've known each other since I was 17. He was 18. And so, like, we're best friends. And I don't know how much they know about our relationship, but when they told me to do a chemistry read with my best friend, I was like, man, this is about to be like warm butter on bread. This is going to be so easy. Like, you know, because we've built a trust and we have had our ups and downs in our relationship as friends. So it's there, you know. And so I did the chemistry read with Corey. And I remember I finished that, you know, and then they called me back like maybe 20 minutes after. Everybody was blowing on my phone because I had my phone on silent. Everybody was blowing on my phone, blowing. And somebody finally got to me and they're like, we want you to get back on the screen because I did that audition, the chemistry read on Zoom. And they were like, we want you to get back on the screen. So I get back on the screen and I'm thinking, oh my God, they were going to tell me I got the part. They're going to tell me I got the part. They're going to tell me I got the part. It's so exciting. They did not tell me I got the part. They were like, yes, we want you to retape this one, you know, scene. I was like, oh, man. But this is all good stuff. So I do it. And then September 19th, I'll never forget because it was 2 days after my birthday. You know, I get the surprise call from Miss Oprah herself saying that she is now going to pass the baton of Sophia to me. And it, when I tell you, Rebecca, my heart was so full because this industry is so tricky to navigate.
Yep.
you know, and it'll mess you up sometimes and make you feel that you have to be a diva, that you have to be, you know, walk around with this huge ego of like, I know who I am. And like, just like it, like I've seen people succeed off this negative energy, right? But that's not my spirit. And so to go through this 6-7 month journey of trying to get this part with humility, with knowing that I've been Tony nominated, knowing that I have a Grammy from doing this same role, having done it for a year, you know, still saying, you know what, I'm gonna let God work, as you know, it says in the movie, the good Lord works in mysterious ways. I'm gonna let him do his thing and I'm gonna get out the way. Instead of like bringing that energy to it. And so I'm just grateful that like it worked out the way that it did. And that it just taught me like you can handle things just with humility and like with grace and, you know, whatever is for you, like it'll never miss you. It's always going to be there.
So tell me about preparing to play Sophia for the film, because is it like riding a bike? Like you've done this role, you know, several years ago, or because you've changed, the prep changed. I mean, what was it like?
Yeah. Oh man. It opens up. It's like a Pandora's box getting to go back. I love exploring a character in this way, because first of all, there's so many layers to it. Yes. To your first point, my life has changed. I am a mother now. I am a wife now. I know, because that relationship between Harpo is so crucial. Like, I actually know what that looks like now to have a commitment to a partner, you know, and what it is to give birth and to be scared of dying, giving birth. And there's all these things, the layers that I didn't have before, right? Which is awesome. But then you have this other complexity that I really enjoyed exploring as an actor, because, like, when we did the Broadway version, you know, we did it in a essentially a black box. You know, it was just wood. Yeah. It was just chairs, wooden chairs, and that was it. We used our imagination, which is the first basis for an actor anyway, using your imagination. So we're using sheets as representation of a baby, you know, folded up sheets. And, you know, I don't have a white mob of people beating up Sophia. You know, the audience has to, like, imagine that with me. So it's almost like coloring with a crayon box of like 12 colors. But then when you get in film and you have the layers of being on an actual plantation and going through this plantation with trillions of trees around you and thinking about the brothers and sisters that were hung on that tree and feeling the wind, you know, and seeing the dirt on your 1930s type boots, you know, it's just a whole different ball game that you get to play with. And now it's like I'm playing with a box of crayons with 64 crayons, you know, in there, 64 crayons. And so like my world just opened up so much. And then you have the layer of a different vision, you know, with Blitz being the director, you different actors that you're working with and what they bring to it. And so it was so much fun creatively and as an artist to just continue to go deeper and deeper. And I'm really grateful that I did have a year playing her in advance, because I kind of was able to settle into it a lot more than I think I would have if I didn't know her so well.
Yeah.
The other layer of it is like the Oprah too. There's this pressure of like, you know, that. But anyway.
Well, I mean, let's go there, because, you know, you're playing the role that she debuted as a screen actor with. And she's the producer on this film. So I assume she was there on set watching you do this work. What is that like for you? What was that like? Do you have to sort of just pretend that's not happening?
Yeah. I kind of had to find a way to block her out. It's really hard. You know, she has such an energy and a presence.
No one can block Oprah out.
Yeah. How could you, right? I remember like sitting there reading like Viola Davis's book, her biography, just trying to like zen out from knowing that Oprah was right there. You know what I mean? It was anything I could do to just like focus in. Like, I was like really trying to meditate and stuff. But she was really gracious to give me the space to bring my own Sophia to the screen. But also at the same time, like, she was there to hold my hand through it. You know, there was moments where I did call on her and I was like, Miss O, I don't know how I'm gonna do this scene for the third time. And I don't mean the third time that day. I mean the third time in three multiple different days where you're shooting the same scene. And I'm like, I've given everything I could possibly give, everything. I've called on every ancestor I could possibly call on. I don't think I can do this again. And she was like, Danielle, they will still be with you. You got this. I promise you, whatever you need will show up. And that's really what I needed to hear in those moments. So, yeah, she's just been such a generous spirit. You know, it was intimidating at times. And hence why I'm very glad that I did play this part for a year, because I was able to just kind of like breathe through that. Yeah. But yeah, I'm grateful that she really let me find my own, you know, help and hold my own. Because what she did in that 1985 version was incredible. It was immaculate. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, she was Sophia. And but now this generation gets to see somebody else embody that and bring all of, you know, my background and my story and who I am to this character.
I'm Alex Schwartz.
I'm Nomi Fry.
I'm Vincent Cunningham. And this is Critics at Large, a New Yorker podcast for the culturally curious.
Each week, we're going to talk about a big idea that's showing up across the cultural landscape, and we'll trace it through all the mediums we love. Books, movies, television, music, art.
And I always want to talk about celebrity gossip, too.
Of course.
What are you guys excited to cover in the next few months?
There's a new translation of the Iliad that's coming out, Emily Wilson. Really excited to see whether I can read the Iliad again, whether I'm that literate. I mean, the jury is out.
I can't wait to hear Adam Driver go again in an Italian accent in Michael Mann's Ferrari.
He can't stop.
I mean, and bless him. I can't wait.
Molto bene.
Molto bene.
We hope you'll join us for new episodes each Thursday. Follow Critics at Large today, wherever you get podcasts.
You really don't want to miss this.
Don't.
Don't miss this.
Don't miss it.
See you soon.
And I'm sure it's different, but how do you prepare when you have a big musical number to do, whether it's on stage or on screen like that? What are sort of your rituals when you know you're going to have to do that kind of show-stopping number?
Ooh, I mean, first of all, we got to give credit to Fatima Robinson, the incredible choreographer. I leaned on her, number one, because I would love to say I'm a triple threat, but to be honest, the dancing thing is not like my forte per se. Mm-hmm. But I'm the type that loves to live and not to live in fear. Like, I'm the type of person who tries to be fearless. You know, I'd rather fall on my face than not try. Mm-hmm. And so I just really let, you know, Fatima and her team lead me in that Hell No number. And Bliss was so cool too, because like he really found a way to let us fly. Like he listened to us. That's how he allowed us to fly. He like just said, you know what? I handpicked you for a reason. So I'm going to give you permission to bring all of your ideas into the room. And so like that scene, like where I'm doing Hell No and they put it in the promos where I'm kicking the door. That was my idea. I was like, Bliss, Sophia ain't just gonna open the door. Like, she gonna kick a door. Like, can y'all, like, make the door, you know, hinge the door, or fix the door, however, so that I can kick it in? And they changed the door. It originally was where I couldn't kick it in. But they changed the door for me to kick it in. So, you know, I just go with the choreographer and go with my own thoughts of who she is. And they let me just move and go how I felt Sophia would go.
Well, it turned out incredible. And I think the film really showcases performances. You know, it is big and cinematic, but you get to really appreciate so many incredible performers. Was there anyone on the cast that you were working with maybe for the first time or that you sort of surprised you in how impressive they were?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, first of all, the cast is so fire. It's so fire.
Yeah.
Of course, I was so grateful to work with Corey Hawkins. I have to start there because we know each other's journey. We've done plays together. We did Raisin in the Sun together. We've done Macbeth together. We've done, you know, everything you could imagine. We've seen each other in the most vulnerable places working together at school. And so to get to do this and go on this journey, this huge journey together as friends, as artists, to have seen each other through it all. And not only that, to like have supported each other through it all.
Yeah.
To get to do this together and, you know, the trust that we have built as artists together, like I could do anything. And Corey was right there with me on screen, and he could throw anything at me. And he was right there with me on screen. So I really enjoy working with him, and I hope to work with him as many times as Denzel's worked with Viola, you know what I'm saying? But Coleman Domingo, man, that man. So I have a crazy story because I've known Coleman for a while, Rebecca. And I met him right when I graduated college. So around 2011, 2012, Coleman was at Signature Theater in New York. And I think he was just finished performing something. I had just seen him in Passing Strange and was like a huge fan. And I was struggling. I was really struggling to get my first acting job. Mm-hmm. I mean, you come out of school, you audition and you hear no, 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 no. And, you know, to be honest, college did not prepare us for auditions because we didn't audition in school.
Right.
And so I went up to Coleman and I was like, brother, I admire your work. But I have to tell you right now, I don't know if I am made for this business. I am not booking anything. And he just encouraged me. He was like, sis, you got to keep going. You got this. There's a spark in you. You know, you're made for this. And to now, however many years later, 10, 11 years later, to have gotten to act with somebody who I admire so much. Because he's a character actor, and that's the type of actor I love being. I like to explore and, you know, just play different people that the world never even thought I could play.
Right.
And Coleman's like that. So getting to rock with him, especially that opening scene when Sophia meets Mr. for the first time, I knew that was going to be spicy because I just was like, I'm going to throw the kitchen sink at this man. Let's go. Let's see if he can keep the ball in the air. Yeah. And he did. It was a lot of fun.
It's such a great scene. And that's such a beautiful story about how you got to reunite at this point in your career. We're almost out of time, but I wanted to sort of look ahead. Obviously, this movie's coming out over the holidays, but what is next for you? I feel like you've been so successful on stage and television and film. What is like on your mind about where your path goes next?
I feel like I'm just going to let the universe lead me where I'm supposed to go.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not in any means done, you know, like I'm just getting started.
Yeah.
But what's important to me is making sure that people that relate to me are seen.
Mm-hmm.
And especially for the like the dark skin plus size girls, I really want Hollywood to expand how they view us and see us because we're so complex. There's so much that we are and what we can do and what we're capable of. And so I just want to keep pushing that. And so that's why I'm like really grateful for like people like Jinji Cohan who put me in Orange, but also like James Gunn who put me in Peacemaker to do an action TV show, you know, to show like I ain't never seen, like, look, I ain't no superhero now. I ain't saying I'm Harley Quinn, but I'm over there, you know, shooting guns and running through fields and playing with John Cena. Like, we can do that too, you know? Yeah. So I just want to keep breaking that box open so that the opportunities can be greater And we're not just playing maids and women that have been battered in the 1930s and, you know, playing old heroes that we love. But I just really want it to expand.
That does it for this week's show. Happy holidays, everybody. We will be back next week with more interviews and a return to award season in full force. Find all of our award season coverage in the meantime at Vanity Fair, on social media at VF Awards Insider. I'm around the internet at Katie Rich and Rebecca.
Rebecca M. Ford.
Our editor and producer, as always, is Brett Fuchs.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.